From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. As editor-in-chief at big blog Red State, Eric Erickson was a huge force in American conservative politics, pushing Tea Party conservatism across this land like a tsunami. He was good at it, too, throwing red meat to conservatives, driving liberals crazy. Today, Eric Erickson has a different tone, still Christian, still conservative. But Erickson is worried, frightened even, by American politics today. On his blog this morning, he calls himself a stranger in a strange land. This hour on Point, conservative Eric Erickson's journey and American politics now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Conservatives, liberals, is Eric Erickson right? Are we at war with ourselves? And never-Trumpers, ever-Trumpers, speak up. What's the way here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Macon, Georgia, is Eric Erickson, conservative blogger, radio host, author. 2 years ago, he was called the most powerful conservative in America. Today, he's still out there, host of the Eric Erickson Show on WSB, one of the country's most listened to talk show stations. He's founder of the blog The Resurgent. He contributes to Fox News, The New York Times, and more. He has a new book just out that is rooted in his political and faith journey. It's called Before You Wake, Life Lessons from a Father to His Children. You can find a link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Eric Erickson, it's great to have you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Can you help us get to know you a little bit better on this personal side? You wrote at the end of last month that about a year ago your life went to hell. Could you share that with us, Eric?
Yes. So being a prominent conservative, it was a little bit out of character, I guess, for many people for me to come out and say I couldn't vote for Donald Trump for president, even before he became the Republican nominee.
February 16, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, things somewhat spiraled out of control. We literally had people show up on our front porch to threaten me and my family, not physically, but they were going to ruin my career and mm-hmm. drive me off the radio and mm-hmm. TV and everywhere else. My children were harassed in the grocery store, yelled at by a man telling them their father was destroying the country. They would come home from school in tears. Other kids wanting to know if I'd been shot, or telling my kids I would be shot, or their mm-hmm. parents hated me. Mm-hmm. As this is going on, I'm finding it harder and harder to breathe, and assuming first it's allergies and then it must be stress. And eventually my wife forces me to go to the doctor, and as they're pushing me into a CT scan to discover that my lungs have filled up with blood clots, she gets a call from doctors at the Mayo Clinic suggesting she may have cancer. So I'm in the hospital. They're not really expecting me to live. Literally, the doctor at the ICU saw my scan on the board and asked if they had taken the body to the morgue yet. And my wife did wind up getting diagnosed with an incurable form of lung cancer that's genetic based. She takes an oral chemotherapy every day that keeps it at bay. So I'm a conservative talk show host on the radio, not supporting Donald Trump, seeing friends of mine being booted off the radio for taking that position. And I need my insurance to cover my wife's medicine, thinking everything's going to come upended. Thankfully, it didn't. There was a lot of prayer involved in last year. And as a result, wrote a book to my kids just to kind of remind them in my realization, laying in bed, what I want them to know about life, that politics wasn't in the equation. There's a lot more to life than politics, but we as a country now seem consumed by politics.
Could I just respond personally to all of that for a second? Because as I read that, you know, I had heart surgery years ago. It went great, and thank heavens. My wife got cancer, did not survive it. It was a terrible, terrible blow. So I know of what you speak, and maybe something more in personal terms, unfortunately, there. But your voice was so big and such a clarion voice for so long in kind of pulling the Tea Party together and talking to conservatives in this country. And yet you're writing today that in your column, you're a stranger in a strange land. What's happened, Eric?
You know, I still have those values, the values I've long advocated for. I haven't changed, I don't think. To the extent that I've changed, I've been in seminary and more and more focused on faith. But I find that there are a lot of friends of mine who they invested their time and talents in the Tea Party effort. They got a lot of people elected, and then they saw nothing change. The people they voted for, they saw not do the things they said. And they became very bitter and very angry and willing to burn it all down. Instead of finding other people and challenging people in primaries, they just decided a pox on both your houses, burn it all down. And I understand the sentiment, having poured so much time into trying to change things and feeling very much like nothing did change, even with getting good people elected to office, you can consider the system broken and want to change it. But I, you know, I've always written towards an audience that shared my worldview, a faith worldview, that victory comes on the last day if you're a Christian. We take comfort and have a measure of humility, knowing that there will be a real justice on the last day. And here I see friends of mine who go to church with me regularly who are so angry, they're willing to go with a guy who doesn't share their values, mocks their values, and really turn the world upside down for them. People, spiritual people looking for political solutions to spiritual problems, which is something I've never advocated for, and yet here I find a lot of people trying to find a political solution to what really is a spiritual problem in the country.
You write that increasingly you find you have no political home for the first time in forever. You say, nowadays it seems both parties have positions on everything, and they set their position not by what is best, but what they other side is for. Both sides are so tribal and now into cults of personality that ideas are no longer important. Flesh that out.
Well, look, I think the greatest example is the polling on the NFL that came out yesterday from Pew, that you have this situation where the Republicans out there, the Trump supporters, I should say, not necessarily Republicans per se, but Trump supporters had about a 34% unfavorable view of the NFL during the taking any protest until the president spoke. And suddenly it skyrockets within days of the president speaking. The fact that one man can come out and say that and suddenly so many people change their view based on the statement of a man. Now, part of it was, I think there was a latent hostility there and they just didn't want to say it. And now the president has allowed them to be comfortable saying it. But time and time again, we're seeing recently with a lot of Trump supporters on the First Amendment or the president's statements about the media. Had Barack Obama said these things, these people would be picking up pitchforks and torches. But the president says them and they're like, yeah, shut them all down. The fact that either side can flip positions so easily based on one person as opposed to the ideas they've long stood for, it should trouble all of us, regardless of partisanship, and we shouldn't deny that both sides have done it.
You came out so early against Donald Trump. As you say, Eric, before he was taken seriously on many fronts, why so early, and did you ever reconsider?
I did reconsider largely because so many people demanded I reconsider. My wife in a Bible study actually had an older lady come up to her and tell her that she and her friends wanted to punch me in the face in a Bible study, said this. We stopped going to church for a while. And so, yeah, I did. And I came to the same conclusion. He's not really a conservative, nor is he a Christian. And I thought that as a Christian and a conservative, it did my own side bad to support someone who really was the antithesis of everything I believed. And maybe he could, at the time, I didn't think he could beat Hillary Clinton either. Mm. And I went back through and ran the numbers and said, okay, even if he could beat Hillary Clinton, I don't think it's worth it. Even saving the Supreme Court, I don't think it's worth it long-term for my values, my worldview, to support this guy. And to the extent he's done things since he's gotten elected that I support, I'm willing to say it. But to the extent he's done things like yesterday, denying that other presidents have called people who've lost loved ones in war, I think I have an obligation to stand up and say this is wrong.
What about the faith side of this? I mean, I'm here as a journalist, and at the same time I'm watching. I was raised very much in the church, not angry fundamentalist church, but and I totally respect the right of all Americans to have an entirely different faith or none at all. It's baked into our Constitution. But I too am struck by this president and the number of people of faith who are following, and the tone and substance of much of what he says, if I just sit back and look objectively at what I was taught and how he's speaking, I can't bring them together, Eric. But I see a lot of Christians following President Trump.
Right.
How do you make sense of that?
There's a pastor I know who refers to the president as God's wrecking ball. Perhaps so. I don't think that a lot of people on the political left understand how much the rapid shift in culture over the last 8 years towards more secularism and more open hostility towards people of faith really caused an existential crisis among a lot of Christians who thought, you know, this is it. They're coming for us. They're coming for the Christian baker who is perfectly fine serving a piece of cake to someone who's gay but doesn't want to make the cake for the wedding, and misrepresenting in some cases those stories, that it caused an existential crisis. And they're like, we've got to do something. Maybe this is a guy who's going to help us, even if we don't like him. I have a lot of Christian friends who held their nose and voted for him. They don't get the attention of his cheerleaders among the faith, but there were a lot who did, largely because they really did become to believe the other side is out to get them. There's a story out in Christianity Today that there really isn't a rise in the number of people who hate Christianity in America. It's just better funded. There's more targeting. There are more lawyers involved. And so it's given rise to this perception, and Donald Trump's, the reaction to Trump from people of faith, I think, really was a reaction based on fear of what's coming.
But you're right. Today, I used to think my side took faith seriously and Christian values seriously, but at this point, the joke is on me. It doesn't, you're right.
Right. The Republican leadership is, I think I would contrast it from the voters. Republican leaders go out and say they love babies and Jesus, and then they vote for a lot of policies that are increasingly the antithesis of babies and Jesus.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with conservative blogger, radio host, author Eric Erickson, longtime editor-in-chief he was of the big political blog Red State, once called the most powerful conservative in America. He is host these days of the Eric Erickson Show on WBS. He's a contributor to Fox News, to the New York Times. He's out with a new book, Before You Wake, Life Lessons from a Father to His Children. And he is looking very carefully and with a kind of a wistful air of sadness, we'll ask him lately, at American politics, thinking, worrying about civil war, going from cold to hot even. You can join us this hour. Is this your guy, Eric Erickson? Are you with him when he's against Trump, or did he take us to Trump? And is there common ground here that we can talk about? Civil War talk. What do you make of that in this country today? Eric Erickson could really sling the red meat. In his day, he once called Michelle Obama a Marxist harpy. Supreme Court Justice David Souter, a goat fraternizing, let's say, child molester, much worse than that. He wrote, called Wendy Davis, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Texas, abortion Barbie. Regrets some of that, maybe some not. He said that he regrets ever having said it about Michelle Obama. It was a ridiculous comment. Apologized for the David Souter tweet. Well, that's the time we live in. He's in a more contemplative mode just lately, and he is with us today from Macon, Georgia, and we're happy to have him. Eric, I want to ask you, if we may, for just a second, to stick with the faith issue. We had the Values Voters conference in Washington, the summit last week, Values Voter. The president was there, and here he was talking about defending the country's traditional religious heritage.
I pledge that in a Trump administration, our nation's religious heritage would be cherished, protected, and defended like you have never seen before. That's what's happening.
I want to ask you about that, Eric, if I may. And here also, there was former Representative Michelle Bachmann, quoting Vice President Mike Pence, saying that President Trump is a solid believer in God, and went on to say that President Trump is a changed man because of his belief in the gospel.
This president is a believer. He's a solid believer. He said that to us privately, and he said it in the Rose Garden the next morning for National Day of Prayer. I believe no one can certify, no one knows the thoughts and intentions of a person's heart, but from my speculation, I do believe this president is a man of God.
Eric Erickson, all right, a man of God, and Donald Trump saying that he will protect the nation's religious heritage, cherish, protect, defend like we've never seen before, and that is happening. Your response to those two?
Well, a lot of people quote in Scripture from Matthew 7, judge not lest ye be judged. Mm-hmm. Scripture from 1 Corinthians actually is very clear that those who say they are of the faith, we are to judge them. And if they do things that cause aspersions to faith, we're to say you need to repent or you're not of the church. And that was one of my frustrations with a lot of Christians in the campaign is that the president, he's on his third wife, the Access Hollywood tape, the things he said, the things he said even now, the things on the campaign trail about the judge in Indiana to even recent statements. If we are people of faith, Scripture tells us we are to judge and to be vocal and to call him to repent. And it seems like there are a lot of Christians out there applauding him on these things instead of calling him to repent. It seems they're much more interested in what he can do for them than they are in his soul. And I think we need to all be concerned about the president's soul. Maybe he is, but we'll know him by his fruits. And I'm looking for the fruit of his faith, and I don't necessarily see it.
You're in seminary now. At the same time, you're doing everything else. Is this an intellectual interest, a faith journey? Are you lining up to become a preacher?
Maybe all of the above. So I spend a lot more time talking about culture and the collapse of culture, if you will, on my radio show on WSB in Atlanta. And I kept getting asked more and more to fill in for preachers on Sundays in small churches and had never been to seminary, figured I better go. And once they found out I was going to Reform Seminary, they all stopped asking. But I really enjoyed it. And I went not so much to get a degree, but to really beef up my knowledge. And it's been a really rewarding experience. Just one day a week, taking a class a semester, yeah, being able to cut out all of the political chatter for a day.
I know this is a realm that's of great importance to you and to many people. I wonder how you put it together with this country's history and devotion to freedom of religion, including freedom of no religion.
Well, you know, if you're an atheist, I'll pray for you, but you absolutely have that right. I see more and more a hostility going the opposite way. We have the situation where a judicial nominee was questioned about her Catholicism by Senate Democrats, despite the prohibition on a religious test for political appointment and jobs. I definitely think there's a growing hostility in the country towards people of faith. But if you're not of faith, that's fine. The founders had this genius system called federalism, where you can live amongst people who believe like you, and only the most essential issues to the national government are handled by Washington. Unfortunately, we live in a system now where both sides have collaborated to make Washington absolutely essential to everything you do in life, and therefore every hill is a hill to die on, and every fight is a fight you must win. And I don't think that's what the founders intended, and I don't think it's healthy for our society.
So where's your energy or your sense of the country turning? You've had a kind of a pause here, and it appears to me, if I'm maybe bold enough to say, in reflection, we saw the tear you were on for years, and you got a lot of people really excited and motivated. Where's Eric Erickson's head now in terms of American politics and where it needs to go?
Well, nearly dying really puts things in perspective, and realizing there is more to life than politics. More and more, I won't say that I've abandoned the views that I've long held. I don't think I've changed in those points. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Republican Party has. They talk a great game and never do anything as far as limited government and cutting the budget, cutting the national debt and moral values. What I have realized, though, is that we're all spending a lot of time building ourselves into communities that look a lot like us thanks to the internet, and we are less and less focused on the actual physical person who lives next door to us. Many people don't even know their next-door neighbor's name, but they have lots of Facebook friends they can name, and I really have been trying to speak for the people who share my politics but don't share a lot of the rage among Trump supporters out there right now that we have to beat the left. I don't think we can beat the left, nor can the left beat the right these days. There's nothing permanent in American politics.
You write today, you say the time is right for a group to rise up and bring together people of faith across race and ethnic lines. The Republican Party seems intent on ignoring the biblical command to take care of the widows, the orphans, the poor, and the refugee. The Democratic Party, you write, seems intent on ignoring the Bible altogether, hijacked by a virulent and mean spiritual secularism. At the same time, you've written quite recently about your fear of a march towards civil war. So which is it? What's going to play out?
I am very, very concerned about growing political violence in the country, and I'm concerned because there was a Pew survey that came out about 2 weeks ago where not quite a majority but close to a majority of conservatives now would be angry if they lived next to a liberal, and about two-thirds of liberals in this country now would be angry living next to a conservative. It's the highest it's ever been. It's higher than in the 60s. And when you have two political sides who can't be friends with each other on non-political ends because we've politicized everything in life, that's not healthy for the country. And it does lead to bad things. And it's one thing that, I mean, since I've been writing back in 2004, I've written fairly consistently that not everything is political. And yet more and more things are becoming political now. The NFL is political. Where you eat is political. How you get your food is political. What you watch on TV is political. And we can largely do that because we don't know our next door neighbor anymore. We just know our Facebook friends and Twitter followers. And we need to depoliticize and de-escalate some of these fights.
When the chips are down, you write that Twitter follower is not going to bring dinner over for the family when you need it, when you're in trouble.
Right. I mean, by building our online communities where everyone thinks exactly like us and no longer paying attention to our actual local community, we lose out on growing a sense of community. We lose out on breaking bread with people. One reason in my book, I included 33 of my kids' favorite recipes, in addition to wanting them to make sure they know how to cook their favorite food if something were to happen to me, I want them to be able to bring people around the dinner table that they know or they want to know, and not just have random people on the internet that are their friends, but actual real friends they get together with.
Can we go to callers? Linda in Medina, Ohio. Thanks for calling, Linda. You're on with Eric Erickson in Macon, Georgia.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Eric. I am so happy to hear Eric's change of heart. I'm so proud of you, Eric, for doing this. I'm a Christian person, and I don't affiliate myself with any church, and I'm not particularly up on the Bible and things, but I know how Christians appear to me, how they should be kind and everything. And I'm afraid that some of these people are using that as a front. They're not acting like Christians so much, like we would expect from Christians. So I'm so happy that you're bringing that up, that, you know, and God is watching, and God probably is thinking, hey, that's not what I meant, you know. But I'm so happy that you're doing it. I would have never listened to you or read you before, Eric, but I would now. I would definitely follow you now because I really love what I'm hearing.
Linda, I appreciate your call. Change of heart, Eric, is that how you describe it? And if so, what is it?
It is more trying to reconcile my politics to my faith instead of my faith to my politics. And, you know, my political views haven't changed. But I definitely think that 10 years ago, I mean, some of the statements you mentioned earlier, written a decade ago, were written at a time where I wasn't trying to reconcile my faith to my politics. I was just one of the guys on Twitter and social media. And, you know, at the same time, I have noticed, particularly in the last year, after I uninvited the president from my 2015 conference that I did, the president's team and his supporters were very quick to throw in my face those statements that were said a decade ago. And, oh, you can't trust this guy. And there is a real recognition. One of the dangers of social media these days is all of us have to be defined by the worst thing we've done. Most of us aren't proud. I wrote very extensively in my book to my kids, I did these things and I'm not proud of them. And here's why you shouldn't do them, because I know. But as we all define each other by the worst thing we've done, eventually a lot of people will get to the point of thinking, why bother moving beyond those things? Let me just be this person. I think we see this with the rise of the alt-right and the white nationalism among 20-something young white men who they feel like there's no reason to grow, there's no reason to change, there's no reason to embrace a gospel that says you can be forgiven because I'm not being forgiven on the internet, so why bother?
Alice in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Alice, you're on with Eric. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm a Christian. I have a parent and a sibling who are both pastors. I have grandparents who are pastors, great-grandparents who are pastors. And I just think that I think it's good to stand up against what President Trump is saying and what he's doing and to point out that it's, you know, none of this is Christian and it's definitely not even American. But I feel like Eric Erickson isn't paying attention enough to what he has done to contribute to lead to President Trump. I really don't. I think that the false Christianity of, you know, I want to be able to bake my cake so I don't have to bake it for these people that I don't like. I think that that's just completely misguided, and I think that it all becomes this political. The people are coming after the Christians when it doesn't have to do with Christianity. It has to do with equal rights. And the same thing, I hate to say this on air, because the same thing with abortion, okay? Being pro-abortion is not being against Christianity. It's not that you want abortion to take over and for all these poor babies to get killed. It's that you want people to have safe clinics that they can go to where they can get birth control so that unwanted babies aren't had in the first place. But it's not even...
Alice, it's a lot already. Stick with us. Let's hold it right there. Eric Erickson writing today, I want a new party, a conservative one where conservatism is not defined by beating the other side, but by pursuing the best policies. There's some challenges from Alice Eric. She says, hey, you put us on the road to Trump, and she's not ready to go on the right. The abortion plank that you're on, and more. What do you say?
Well, I would say I disagree with her on the issue of baking the cake. Take the case before the Supreme Court, Jack Phillips, for example, who was perfectly happy to bake the cake for the gay couple. He just wasn't going to custom design the things they wanted and still was sued and compared to a Nazi for not wanting to do that for a religious ceremony. This is a man, by the way, who won't bake cakes for Halloween because he considers it a pagan holiday, and yet his business and livelihood being destroyed. Or Baronel Stutzman in Washington State, a florist who had gay customers. In fact, it was existing customers of hers who wanted flowers for the wedding, and it was a religious ceremony she objected to, not providing flowers to a gay couple. I hear this a lot from people, that this is about equality and this is they don't want to serve gay customers. All of the people being brought to the Supreme Court had existing gay customers that they gladly, willingly, lovingly served, but it was a religious ceremony they didn't want to contribute to. And I think there is in this country a growing, on both sides, unwillingness to recognize facts like these. I get a lot of people who say, well, you contributed to the rise of Donald Trump. A lot of people want me to acknowledge that. To the extent that I've said things I've regretted in the past, I've said I regret them. But I also think a lot of the people who say these things, they disagree with my politics and equate that politics overall to the rise of Donald Trump. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. Have there been candidates I've advocated for in the past who have disappointed me? Yes, greatly. Have there been candidates that I've supported in the Tea Party? Yes. And I don't think we can necessarily equate the rise of the Tea Party to the rise of Trump. I think what we can do is we can equate the rise of a lot of Tea Party candidates who went to Washington and then did nothing they promised to the rise of an angry people willing to burn down Washington, which definitely gave us Trump.
Can we respect the idea of equal rights and find some kind of working compromise among...
I would like to. It seems to me that it's an easy thing to say. You're not allowed to say no gays allowed. You can't do that. You can't say no blacks allowed. You can't say no gays allowed. But I also think that we have to at least respect people of faith enough to say a wedding is traditionally a religious ceremony. And while they can't say no gays allowed, we can say we're not going to participate in this religious ceremony, be it an Eid celebration if it's a Christian, be it a Christmas celebration if it's a Muslim, or be it a wedding that they think offends their faith and values. That, I think, is where the compromise is.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with conservative blogger, radio host, author Eric Erickson. He was longtime editor-in-chief of the big political blog Red State. The Atlantic once called him the most powerful conservative in America. He's out now with a new book, Before You Wake, Life Lessons from a Father to His Children. You can find a link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. And he is with us on the air from Macon, Georgia. You can join the conversation. What's your question for Eric Erickson? When Donald Trump is in charge, does Eric Erickson's kind of conservatism now matter, or is it sidelined? What's the common ground here? Where's the Civil War, if that's actually out there? And how do we move this country forward together? Eric, lots of callers for you. Brian in Beaufort, South Carolina. Brian, you're on with Eric Erickson.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Erickson, I would like to applaud you for having sort of the discretion to judge Donald Trump by his lack of peace, patience, kindness, gentleness. More importantly, for you politically, having kind of worked to push at least one party towards an extreme, do you think going back to the middle with something like, you know, a general slash prime, or, you know, like a general slash runoff election instead of primary elections to pull the political parties back to the middle might be a solution?
Well, you know, I'm actually still a conservative.
We got that. We changed my view.
So I don't see that conservatism is an extreme position. I certainly think people chose the extremist option for president. But I don't think a pro-life position, a limited government, or reducing Washington's power over us is an extremist position. Moving back towards the left in this country, I think we inevitably will. The pendulum will swing. I think the downside of where we are is not the necessarily the positions a conservative would advocate, but that right now there is in Washington among Republicans, as there is growing on college campuses among the left, people who think that we can impose a permanence on what we want, and there really is nothing permanent in American politics. And the desire to impose a permanence by either side, I think, inevitably leads to a place none of us should want to go, and that includes violence.
I want to be sure I understand your response to Brian. When he asks about moving or looking for systemic changes that might produce different outcomes, maybe closer to the middle, are you favoring that, or you're in culture war mode and forget, never mind that?
Well, I don't know that there are systemic changes.
Well,
that
to election systems is what I mean to say.
Well, I guess what we're getting at ultimately is a proportional representation, and I don't favor proportional representation in the country. I still like our first-past-the-post system. One of the arguments now made in the gerrymandering case before the Supreme Court essentially boils down to a proportional representation decided by judges. I think that causes more problems than it solves.
David in Bradenton, Florida. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Eric. Yes, I have a couple of questions, please. The first one is, why are we attaching goodness to Christianity? I know many people from other religions that are just as good or even better than Christians.
Okay, yeah.
So by exception, we're saying that Christianity is what we should be following. Second question is, what happened to the division or separation between church and state? I don't think the church has anything to do with politics, or shouldn't have.
Eric?
Thank you.
Well, thank you, David.
You know, I would say first, I'm a Christian, so my worldview is shaped by Christianity. I believe there's one path to salvation, and that's through Christ, and embrace him, and you'll get forgiveness of your sins, and you'll go to heaven, and I think we all should. As far as the separation of church and state, I get this argument all the time, but everyone has a moral view, and I can't detach my morals from my faith and go into politics and say, well, my moral values say these things are good, therefore I can't do them now that I'm in government. I definitely think that our morals and our faith shape what we would do if we were elected. And unfortunately, I see a lot of Republicans who say they believe these things and they get in office. And, well, you have, for example, the disgraced now congressman from Pennsylvania who wound up not actually believing what he was campaigning on and having an affair and seeking an abortion for his girlfriend. which is just a horrifying thing.
But what about our caller's appeal to first recognition of the fact this is a country of many cultures and many faiths, and you can find definitely very good people in no doubt all of them. And put that up against the president saying, you know, he, a political leader, is going to embrace the traditional, and by which I presume he means Christian, faith of this country like no other, and protect and defend it. Is that the right role for a president of the United States?
No, that is not. When you are president, you're president of everyone. And I know there are people probably listening right now who say he's not my president. And just as I told Republicans that Barack Obama was their president, Donald Trump is your president, whether you agree with him or not. And he should seek the welfare of the country, whatever that welfare is, and not say, I'm only going to help this group of people. He's to help everyone. And the policies that he produces, they shouldn't be looked at as what constituent group am I going to help and which will I hurt, but what will do the best for the country. I think that my morals as a Christian are the right values that can help the country regardless of who you are. And I think everyone is entitled to that regardless of what your values are. The question, though, is when you get to Washington or wherever you are, not what am I doing for the Christian, but what am I doing for the American, or what am I doing for my state? And when you get into politics and you only look at what am I doing for my constituent group, I think you're doing your job wrong.
Could we turn from religion to race for a minute? It's been a big issue. You wrote very compellingly after the Charlottesville encounter in August and the president's response to that, where, you know, he talked about hatred, bigotry, violence on many sides. And you wrote, I'm glad he said something, you wrote, but this is the same president who routinely mocked and attacked Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton for failing to call Islamic radicalism by its name. In Charlottesville, evil has a name, and it is white supremacy. And you said he should have said so. You said he employs individuals who embolden this movement. You said he winked at it and made kissy face with the alt-right. As his advisors persuaded him it would be good politically. You said it's no coincidence that many of the men who marched in Charlottesville wore Make America Great Again hats. This president and his advisors, you wrote, made a nefarious evil feel comfortable coming out of the shadows. Have you seen any change in that?
No, I have not. In fact, I was disappointed in Sebastian Gorka's statement this weekend that the his quote on stage at the Faith and at the Values Voter Summit was about how much more damage, his direct quote, the left has no idea how much more damage we can do to them as private citizens. No president should seek to damage private citizens. He should seek to help them. And there is, and it's growing on both sides. And my friend Dan McLaughlin, who writes at National Review, has a great piece on this, that whether you want to call it the alt-left or the radical left and the alt-right are increasingly viewing this country in terms of skin color and white supremacy. And there are those who want to, through violent ends, end what they see as a racist society. There are those who want to prop up what they see as a racist society. I see an American society where there are good people of all races helping each other, loving their neighbor, working in local communities for a better country, and yet you have the loudest voices in the room, it seems like, on both sides, are fixated on race. And that doesn't go well for any of us, I think, if the country moves in either direction.
When you say on both sides, I want to understand exactly what you mean. We've heard the president and Sebastian Gorka and others lately. What if there's a fixation on the left on race that's damaging? How would you describe that? What do you mean is damaging?
Well, for example, Ta-Nehisi Coates of The Atlantic has given several interviews lately where he sees this white supremacy in charge of the country. At the same time, he wrote that he saw Barack Obama's presidency was the black community's presidency, not just Barack Obama's. He wrote a piece where he uses the phrase amulet of whiteness, and he goes after Donald Trump and his supporters for evaluating the president's policies based on the president's race. And I think there are voices on both sides that are both seeing the country in racial terms. And on Ta-Nehisi Coates' side, for example, he gave an interview to Ezra Klein where he all but suggests we need a violent French Revolution in this country to shake things up and dismantle it. And I think both sides of this racialism on the left and the right are looking for violent solutions. One, to upend what they see as the illegitimacy of the American experiment, and the other to cement what they see as the whiteness of the American experiment. And when you have both sides echoing each other in that language, where in the middle there's a vast array of American people who don't see their next-door neighbors black and white, but see them as their next-door neighbor, those voices get crowded out by the anger on the racial sides.
Is the race or races that have experienced historic oppression, which was very plain and straightforward oppression for a long time and then more subtle, but are they entitled to more insistence on change?
Oh, I think they are. But how do we go about that change is, I think, the different question. And the solutions, as a conservative, I may disagree with the liberal on, but I think there are definitely solutions where we can find some common ground. I think, for example, one of the issues conservatives have to take more seriously is the issue of police brutality in this country and profiling. I've actually got a friend of mine in Atlanta who is a black pastor who has a white wife who was once pulled over in a different state. And held at gunpoint while they checked on his wife, making sure she wasn't a pastor. I think conservatives need to recognize these things do happen. Philando Castile should still be alive in Minnesota, and that is something conservatives need to recognize. At the same time, I do think that on the left there is a movement that is growing, just as it is on the right, that people don't pay attention to, where they also see everything in terms of race in this country and what one race should do for another race as opposed to what Americans should do for Americans.
We're talking with conservative blogger, author, radio host Eric Erickson. Wes in Nashville, Tennessee. Wes, you're on with Eric. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Love your show. Mr. Erickson, I'm going to be harsh here, but I feel very strongly on this topic, so hear me out. I'm frankly sick and tired of hearing from conservatives who have suddenly found their conscience and want sympathy. With all due respect, conservatives such as yourself created this anti-government monster that is scorching the earth on which we all live. Here's how. You made a living off spreading vitriol. You can't say the government and politicians are evil and then act like the victim when voters believe you and want to burn it all down.
Eric.
You know, I'm not looking for anybody's sympathy. And I do think that the government has dominated our lives, and the government has, to an extent, the federal government in particular, has become more and more important to our daily lives than the founders intended. I think it's a terrible thing. And I also think it's a terrible thing that the Tea Party conservatives spent years trying to send to Washington people who promised to de-escalate that fight and instead made it even worse. Do I think the federal government controls us too much and we need to scale it back? Absolutely. And I think that many of the cultural fights we have right now, many of the political fights we have right now, are fights only because Washington controls too much of our lives, something the founders never intended. And to the extent I have pointed that out repeatedly and tried to find small government conservatives, I'm not looking for sympathy, and I'm certainly not apologizing for trying to find people who would promise to go to Washington and de-escalate those fights.
One more call. Wes, I appreciate yours. One more. Darius in Caribou, Maine. You're on with Eric Erickson. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Eric.
We may have lost Darius right there. Our time grew.
Comment, and I guess one question for Eric. My comment was, I think this last election cycle was an extremely polarizing event in American politics. We're seeing more and more people taking extreme sides on both the political left and the political right. And I think the two-party system has something to do with that. The reason Donald Trump was able to captivate so many evangelical Christians was because they were left with two poor options. So I just wanted to get your take on that, Eric.
Listen, I definitely think the 2016 election had two poor options. Honestly, I think that from my perspective, looking at the Democratic Party, telling themselves that the Russians stole the election as opposed to accounting for a poor campaign and poor candidate on their side sets them up potentially for failure in 2020, because I don't actually think the Russians stole the election. And the Republicans as well need to look and realize that all of their supposedly super candidates got beaten by Donald Trump. And why was that? And if I put my finger on it, I would say that it was because they all campaigned on many of the things Trump promised his base as far as getting Washington out of their lives, and they kept breaking those promises, so no one believed them anymore, and they were willing to blow up their own party in an effort, they think, to save their country. Now, you and I can disagree that they're saving the country by doing that, but I think both parties have failed. It's not just the Republican Party. The Democratic Party is completely as hostage to a rich elite as the Republican Party is, and their values are increasingly as unaligned from the base of the Democratic Party as the Republican Party elites are.
There's the rich elite issue here. There's a cultural side here. We've just got a minute and a half left. You say this country is creeping. We creep ever closer to heating up a cultural Cold War. Move from a there, the Civil War idea comes back in again, which is just appalling that we've arrived at a moment like this. How do we back away from that?
I think we back away from it from de-escalating Washington, realizing both sides that the fights in Washington aren't as important as we think, but really all of us turning to our next door neighbor and our local community and finding solutions there instead of looking to an abstract government in Washington for those solutions.
What's the effect of 3.5 or 7.5 more years of President Trump?
Oh, sweet Jesus, we are 9 months into this presidency and I'm exhausted already. Maybe we'll have the second coming before then. I don't know. Listen, something I think has to change with the president, or at least the level of rhetoric in this country, because 9 months is exhausting. 4 years, we're going to snap.
Seems unlikely that he's going to change.
Correct.
What about the 25th Amendment, the impeachment path?
You know, I think a lot of what's being pushed out there on the 25th Amendment amounts to fan fiction for the resistance. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
But you say something has to change then, like what?
Yes, we have to change. We need to pay less attention to Washington and more attention to our backyard.
Good luck with that when it's Donald Trump in charge.
True.
Eric Erickson, his new book is Before You Wake, Life Lessons from a Father to His Children. Blogger, radio host, The Eric Erickson Show on WSB out of Atlanta. Founder of the blog The Resurgent. Eric, come again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for being with us in this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.